We saw King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, so you didn't have to. Welcome to the Film Threat Podcast. I am Chris Gore, sometimes known as That Chris Gore, joined by my co-host...
Anthony Ray Bench, in the flesh.
In the flesh, yes. We are together in the same room. This is how you're supposed to do a podcast. And we're in an enclosed space in my... we're in my kitchen. Yeah. Let's be honest. We're in
Film
my kitchen.
Studios.
We're in my kitchen. In my apartment that seems to be falling apart, because last week I had this crazy disaster where I realized I can't have three appliances on at one time because I live in this old space and the electrical is not correct. So my refrigerator's not working. I am angry. But if this is the worst thing that happens to me this week, it's not a bad thing. Yeah. It's not a bad week if that is the worst that happens. Okay, so we have a lot of stuff to talk about. Movies. We are going to delve a little bit into some trailers that have just come out. And we kind of have to talk about some television, too.
Yep.
But let's talk about this King Arthur Legend of the Sword film directed by Guy Ritchie.
Are you a Guy Ritchie fan?
Yeah, I am. What? Why are you not?
I don't know. He just, it doesn't appeal to me.
Why? Like, you don't like...
Just his style of editing and stuff like that is very jarring.
Okay, so it is a King Arthur movie, right? Mm-hmm. Charlie Hunnam plays, of course, King Arthur. Yeah. He pulls the sword from the stone. It's a very stylized, almost begins with a Lord of the Rings style epic battle with giant elephants. So there's a lot of digital effects. There's sort of a setup to Jude Law being the main villain. And Eric,
a boring villain, by the way,
kind of a boring villain. Well, here's a boring villain in every movie, and I will be screaming this at the top of my lungs until someone in Hollywood gets the message. Stop making your villains a digital effect.
Yes.
Better than a digital effect is an actor. The best villain in the Marvel universe is Tom Hiddleston, who plays Loki.
Agreed.
He is a person in a costume that has created a character. Digital effects do not make good villains, i.e. Suicide Squad, i.e. Batman v Superman, i.e. let's go through all the movies where there's some digital special effect. This new Mummy movie with Tom Cruise that's coming out that is effectively digital effects do not make good villains in movies.
Yeah, the 1998, or was it 1999? I don't remember. But the Mummy that came out with Brendan Fraser, like, the effects looked better back then than they do in this new one.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I like that it's stylized. I like that he was going for something different. It's sort of a rock and roll King Arthur in a sense. I like Guy Ritchie.
Comparing the mummies. I wasn't talking about...
I was talking about the new King Arthur movie.
Right.
We're bouncing around. We started talking about King Arthur. Let's talk about... I diverted to talk about how much I hate digital villains, and I do. I really don't like when you have a character, and there are, you know, not just the main baddie that Arthur, played by Charlie Hunnam, fights at the climax.
Yeah.
But other villains throughout that are digital.
Dude, I rolled my eyes so hard when I saw that stupid giant snake.
I mean, it's like giant snake or giant... You're not... look, I don't know that anyone cares if we go into spoiler territory in this. I mean, if you know The Legend of King Arthur, you know this film. This is King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
Yeah.
So I guess they're trying to brand it in a certain way to distinguish it from other King Arthur films. But...
I heard it was supposed to set up like a franchise.
Right. It seems like it's not going to happen because
the movie fucking tanked.
Yeah. Yeah. The very end of the movie, I'm saying the tag after the climax, they're clearly setting it up for what they thought might be a franchise. But I actually like this Guy Ritchie style of this happens in every Guy Ritchie movie where someone tells a story of something that happened, but they're an unreliable narrator, so they have to re-begin telling the story, or they go back and the character adds a detail that wasn't in the story. So you're hearing the character in the present tell a story, And then you see the flashback of that story, which is constantly being altered because the character in the present keeps adding new details. It's funny. It's a different way to show a flashback. I like that. It's every Guy Ritchie movie, and there's a sequence where that happens.
It didn't work for me here.
It didn't work for you? I liked that part. I liked things original.
That was hands down the most boring part of the movie for me. Like, I was just like, all right, let's go. Come on.
Right. I mean, look, it sets up like, here are the good guys, here are the evil guys, and their motivations. There are a lot of, I just feel like we're living in a game, the age of Game of Thrones, and there are a couple Game of Thrones actors in this.
Yep.
Most of the actors are names that you cannot pronounce.
Yeah. Yeah. We got Littlefinger and Roose Bolton. That's the best we'll do.
Yeah. Yeah. But okay. So try to pronounce their names just so I can have a good laugh.
Okay. Let's see. Roose Bolton is played by Michael McElhattan.
McElhattan. Come on.
Okay. All right. There we go.
And
let's see.
Look, what I'm saying is we live now where Game of Thrones dominates our, you know, the world of fantasy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a spectacular, Game of Thrones is such a great build. Every episode feels like a movie.
Aidan Gillen.
And who?
Littlefinger.
Yeah.
Aidan
Gillen.
Yes.
See, these aren't that bad. McElhattan. Come on. Yeah. Get it together. Okay. So Game of Thrones, which is very adult, it contains nudity and adult situations. And it contains no one just dies normally in Game of Thrones. They're just gruesome, over the top, horrific deaths. And the deaths were just okay. So I kind of feel like as I was watching it, like you probably, I was comparing it to Game of Thrones. Now, I will admit, I had fun watching King Arthur.
Okay.
I did not like it. So does that make sense? Like, as I'm watching, I'm like, oh, this is really dumb. Yeah. This is stupid. This is like Game of Thrones with no layers and no character depth whatsoever, right? Like, it's just a little... But there is something that really bothered me in the movie that needs to be... I haven't read this in a review or anything, but it was so obvious to me as I'm watching it. There's this... What happened is, so King Arthur gets the sword, right? And the sword, like, has these weird magical powers. And whenever he holds the sword with two hands, he goes into berserker mode.
Yeah.
And precisely. It is as if the movie completely ripped off the Arkham Knight moves in Batman, in the Batman Arkham Knight video game, when he gets the multiplier bonuses and he goes from character to character and sort of like, he punches
exactly
a guy, then he flips another guy over, then he goes over here, and it literally rips off that sequence from a video game. I mean it is, I'm watching this going like, oh my God, this is right out of Arkham Knight.
And Arkham Knight has better graphics, in my opinion.
Right. But it was weird.
It looked terrible. I love the concept. And you know what? Like, the first time they do it, the first time he actually does something with the sword, where they're in that courtyard, it looked cool. Like, I thought it was perfect.
But couldn't you, I mean, like, right away, didn't your first thought was like, oh my God, that's right out of that video game?
No, right away, my first thought was like, this is a cool concept. Like, you know, everything kind of slows down and like the sword kind of takes control.
Yes, just like in Batman Arkham Knight, all of the games or Arkham Asylum or Arkham whatever. But it's the specific mode of playing that game where Batman, you get a multiplier if you're able to do combos, right? And then you can keep hitting guys, so you're basically taking out. So this is what happens in it. He just goes, and I'm watching this going, it's a complete lift from the game.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Well, like I said, I would argue that the first time that they do that sequence, like, I wasn't thinking about that. Like, I thought it was a really cool idea.
I thought about it instantly. Yeah. I think it's because I played all of those games, except for the last one, which basically destroyed the franchise, where you had to have all the Batmobile missions. It sucked. Yeah, no, it just made me not want to play that game.
But that last sequence, like, it looked so bad. It reminded me of the second
Matrix. Oh, the last sequence with the big, giant digital effect that he was fighting?
Yeah.
And then all the sort of flashbacks to when he was a kid.
Yeah.
It was kind of lame. Yeah. We're not ruining this for anybody, but I hope. But
this movie had, it had a lot of like really interesting ideas. And I think
yes, that's true.
Executed. I wonder if the studio did a hack job on it. Like, maybe it was like a rated R movie.
First of all,
like,
why would Warner Brothers, a very prestigious studio, meddle with the creative vision of a filmmaker?
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
Why would they do that?
Yeah. Yeah. Why would they do that?
I don't know.
I don't know. Because they don't.
That's what they're doing.
That's sort of their MO, right? Yeah. Like, they're like, it's weird. It's sort of like across the board, you could just say, yeah, all Warner Brothers movies are edited poorly.
Yeah.
They're just poorly edited films.
There were so many things that popped up that just went nowhere. Like, you know, not really to spoil anything, but the bad guy played by Jude Law draws his powers from some kind of dark magic and he kills people that he loves. He becomes stronger. That went nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, they introduced a character. I didn't even know it was his daughter.
And right, right.
She comes into the movie and, like...
Yeah, so, yeah, so Jude Law is basically killing it loved ones as a way to draw energy.
Yeah.
But there's no... there's. I mean, usually with villains, you kind of go like, well, you know, I wouldn't do what he did, but I understand why he's doing it. And this was just freaking weird.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was the... what you really didn't understand. Like, that's why I think Darth Vader is such a popular, you know, probably the most popular villain in cinematic history. So you understand Darth Vader's job is just different than yours.
We're going back to Star Wars.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, shoot. You know what? There should be, you should have like an electrical charge where, yeah, where like you just attach like certain, you know, nodes to me that if ever I sort of delve into that territory, you just go, and I just sort of convulse.
At the end, you would look like Christopher Walken in Batman Returns.
Oh,
just
God.
All that skeleton just sizzling.
Yeah. Oh, God. That was so oh, bad. That was such a bad, yeah, effect. Yeah.
I went in just with really low expectations, and you saw it, and you mentioned it briefly, that you had fun with it.
I had fun, yeah, as I was watching it,
okay,
and then I left the theater, and I was like,
but I did not have fun with it. I thought it was a terrible movie.
I had fun. I don't know. Maybe it was... Okay, so admittedly, circumstances. Yeah. I saw it like on a... I think it was a Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I went and I had Peroni, which is my favorite Italian beer.
Okay.
Which they sell at the Arclight. And I enjoyed it. So...
Well, that's interesting because I showed up late to the movie. Like, I came in like probably like 3 minutes after it started.
Uh-huh.
The people next to me were talking and making out. They were high school students.
Oh, wow.
So I had to leave the theater and ask, you know, like, hey, like, I'll find another seat, but can you guys keep an eye on these people? Like, they're really disrupting the theater. So I'm sitting there in misery, just like stewing over what has happened, because this is, you know, this happened at Guardians of the Galaxy 2, where...
You seem to attract that. I never have a problem.
Maybe it's
I'm
hyper aware. Like, I just notice these things and other people don't, but like,
I would just move. I'm sure the theater wasn't full.
Oh, no, it wasn't. it really wasn't. Which made it even worse because it was loud. Like, it just...
But don't you want to do that thing? Can't you just glare at the person?
I glared.
Did you try... Okay, did you go through your someone being disruptive at a movie? Did you go through the first thing you do, the checklist, you glare?
And then you do the shh.
Yeah, shh. That's the next thing.
That's an aggressive shh.
And then what I like to do is just a really deep voice. Hey, can you be quiet? We're trying to watch the movie. And I sound like, and first of all, it's dark, so they don't know that I'm sort of this wimpy white dude. So, but I will try to put on my most scary sounding voice and just be so quiet, unassuming, and Liam Neeson-y.
Yeah.
That's what I try to do.
Now,
I'm not saying I'm always successful. And then the last thing is just to go and just talk to the people there. And
I switch around the glare and the shoe. Like, the shh is like the first thing. Yeah. It's the first thing I go to.
Anthony, shh.
You shh.
Shh.
You shh your face.
Shh.
Anyways.
I think you need a little practice with your shh. Shh. Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
that's
probably good. hurt people's ears. I'm sorry about that. No, I go with the shh first, and then, you know, I go with the glare, and then I, you know, I politely ask them. I say, hey, man, can you keep it down? Or in this case, you know, the girlfriend or whatever was texting. Mm-hmm. And her screen was bright, and I was just like, hey, can you turn down the screen? She's like, yeah. And I was like, and can you, like, kind of not text her in the movie? Like, the movie was, like, $15. Can we, you know, please be respectful?
Yeah, and they snuck in.
And, oh, I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
And she was just like, yeah, sure, whatever. And I'm like, all right, that's kind of rude. So 10 minutes later, her phone lights up again. She's sitting there texting. The audio is on. It's not even like her phone is silent. And that's when I got up. I went outside and I was just like, look, the people in the top row are being idiots. Like, can you please like keep an eye on them? In the meantime, I'm going to move my seat. So that's what I did. So I was in a bad mood.
Did you get like a comp ticket? You should have gotten a comp ticket.
No, like I.
That happened to me during a screening of Prometheus. There was a woman that just talked the whole movie, and she finally got kicked out, and we all got comp tickets.
There's a special place in
it. It was weird. But okay, so back to the movie. Let's get back to the, you know, your failed attempt. There should be like I know the woman who started the Instagram passenger shaming.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever like, if you just look up hashtag passenger shaming, you'll find the Instagram. And it's just horrible photos of people on flights, like clipping their toenails. There needs to be moviegoer shaming.
Yes.
So I think next time that happens, Anthony, because this happens to you a lot, you take a photo.
Yeah.
And post it on the Film Threat Instagram. That I'm works. Not joking.
Okay.
And we will hashtag it moviegoer shaming or something. Moviegoer. We'll come up with some hashtag that'll be the hashtag. I want to start documenting these things because I really despise that. Like that bugs the shit out of me.
Well, you heard the, there's a funny story where a guy took a girl on a date and I heard that. Yeah. And James Gunn, retweeted it and he said like he's suing for
$17 and some odd cents to like get the money back because the girl texted during the entire movie.
Yeah, and James Gunn tweeted, "Don't stop suing her. Like she deserves jail time."
Yeah, yeah,
I agree
exactly.
Wholeheartedly.
I just think that like this is why I actually only will go to theaters like iPic or ArcLight or some of these higher end ones where because just going to a regular theater is freaking miserable.
It is.
It really is not, you know, this, it's.
And that's heartbreaking. I loved going to the movie theater. I still love going to the movie theater, but it seems like every other time.
Hey, I loved flying on United Airlines, but you know where that led everybody. All right. So, okay. But like, all right. So back to this. Look, it's just, I feel like it's this, the drag about it is, especially because Charlie Hunnam talked about how much he loved the original Excalibur.
Yeah, fantastic film.
The original Excalibur. Yeah, I mean it gets a little dull in the middle there and towards the end it's bizarre, but there are so many epic sequences. The music in it is incredible. It has it's I'm getting chills just thinking about it.
Yeah.
It is
like the definitive King Arthur movie, I think.
Right, right. And nothing I really feel like you have to take the subject matter seriously, and in this it was way too video game short attention span influence. It was, you know what? It's the King Arthur movie that's made for people that text in the movie theater.
Yeah. Oh, that you nailed it on the head.
Yeah, which is why you not only hated the movie, you hated the audience for the movie.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it. I had a good time because I accepted it for what it was. Mm-hmm. But look, if you push comes to shove, you ask me to rate it.
Yeah.
It's a 6 out of 10 at best.
I would rate it the same rating I gave Underworld Awakening. I gave that a 3 out of 10.
I'm saying 6 out of 10 only because I had a good time.
Okay.
And that's it. But
what do you think of Charlie Hunnam?
I like him. I mean, you know, he's been better in other things.
Yeah, I think he has a hard time like sticking to an accent. He was all over the place with this. It was really distracting. I'm sorry to be nitpicky, but it's the truth. Like it was driving me insane.
I
like this movie. I love like sword and sorcery movies.
Yes, me too.
Even the bad ones. Like,
well, no, see here, correction. I don't like fantasy that much.
Okay, I love fantasy.
I like sword and sandals kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I like the movie Gladiator.
Yeah.
I think by Ridley Scott is brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm more
of a legend guy.
I was not a Lord of the Rings fan.
I love Lord of the Rings.
But I was a fan of the movies.
See, we disagree on shit.
Right, right. But no, I'm saying I'm a fan of the movies. And but Game of Thrones, like, changed it for me. Like, I think Game of Thrones is so smart. Here's what I don't like about all fantasy films. Is all fantasy films are just making up rules. Here's what I like about Star Wars or Star Trek, although they break their own rules. They have certain sets of rules. I know how a lightsaber works. I know that, you know, they set up rules and follow rules. What I feel that fantasy films have done for me that have sort of checked me out is, and then the magic comes and fixes the thing. It's, you know, you can only use Deus Ex Machina once per film. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in that realm of fantasy, I feel like it's used it's overused. Yeah. I think bad fantasy films just, you know, they're just throwing stuff out and making up rules. What I do like about Game of Thrones, I feel like it is, has established certain rules of how magic can work. And other, you know, dragons, they grow at a certain pace. They're not just coming out fully formed.
They really,
you know,
toe the line of mysticism and realism.
Right, right.
I think they do a great job where...
Yes, that's exactly it. They toe the line between mysticism and realism. And that's where, see, the current Alien film, which opens this weekend, which there's already a review on the Film Threat website, filmthreat.com.
14?
Well, we talked about it on the podcast, but also there's a review on the website as well, which you can read. I believe you wrote the review, right?
I did write
the review. One of the things that if you think about, all the Alien movies are killer babies. Here's what bothers me about the Alien films.
They're matured.
Yeah, matured. But how many? Okay, let's go back to the first Alien movie, 1979.
Okay.
How old was the alien at the end of the movie?
Like hours.
No, at the end of, no, not hours.
Hours? No.
Couple day. First of all, it came out of John Hurt, right? Mm-hmm. It came out of, first it was the facehugger, then it came out of his stomach as sort of a snake-like thing, chest burster. Then they found the little, like, skin of it, like a snake skin, right? Then they looked up and it was giant, right? Mm. So, but what I'm saying is from the time of birth, that is, you know, the chest burst out of John Hurt to the end of the film when Ripley knocks the alien out. How many days old was it?
I have no idea.
What's a good guess?
I was guessing hours. I thought the whole thing took over like the course of a day.
There's a lot of things that happen. I think it's a couple days. It's maybe a couple days. But you're basically looking at a 2 day old.
Yeah.
Okay. And all of these alien movies, and especially Alien Covenant, the aliens come out and they're just grown. They're just grown adults. The human hosts, you know, are just used to birth them. And then as soon as they're birthed, so if you think about it, all alien movies are killer babies, killer baby aliens.
Except for Aliens.
No, not, well, maybe you're right.
Yeah. See, aliens, here's the thing.
Because
I found
you
this
see,
interesting.
You're right. Because they exist, they've existed. But what I don't like is this accelerated growth rate where suddenly something is born and then it's gigantic. That makes no sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. Killer babies.
On our Alien Covenant episode, or maybe we mentioned it off the air, but we were talking to Charlie DeLazarica about the different designs, like how it changed designs with the xenomorphs from Alien to Aliens. I was reading something interesting that James Cameron said, and I don't know if James Cameron was just talking out of his ass. I think he has, you know, a little bit more of an authority on those films by being a part of it. But he said that the reason why there's a difference between the way that the xenomorph looks in Alien and the way the xenomorphs look in Aliens is because they are matured. Like, apparently, as aliens age, like their wrinkles are like the little ridges on their head. I found that interesting. So just throwing
that
knowledge
out there.
Yeah,
because they were already on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, they were just sort of, you know, sleeping.
So one alien movie without babies.
One alien movie. Yeah, but all the alien movies post Aliens and the first one are basically babies.
Yep.
Do babies have like a killer? Usually even babies, even like, you ever see like cubs? You ever look at animal porn, which is basically just super cute animal babies of all kinds? Baby hippos. No, it's not. Okay. Well, you're right. Okay. I didn't mean it that way. What I mean is when you're looking at cute baby animals, kittens, puppies, but little lion cubs or tiger cubs, they're so playful.
Yeah.
They're so playful. I would like to see an alien movie where it's kind of playful. It's kind of playful like a kitten.
That's a dumber idea than the flying xenomorph.
Why I am not directing Alien Covenant 2.
You know, I'm finding it interesting that we are like almost looking for any excuse not to talk about King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
Yeah, we keep diverting.
Yeah.
How many other movies were mentioned in the course of... Look,
yeah.
King
Can
Arthur...
Can you name any of the characters aside from Arthur?
Uther.
Okay. And I'm assuming that's Eric Bana's character.
That's correct. Yeah. Yes.
That's it.
I don't even remember the name of Jude Law's character.
Yeah, because he was a terrible villain. He was boring. Like he sucked. He sucked. That movie just it was pointless to begin with. It left no impression. Like all of the characters just kind of just morph together. and serve no purpose.
Look, first of all, I do agree with you that it was awful. It's just in the moment that I was watching it, I enjoyed it, and then I left and I was like, eh.
I'm interested to see if there is a longer cut, and
I don't know that a longer cut would help it. I think that, like,
I think it might.
I think digital characters, I don't know why this is a thing in Hollywood, but it's not. I mean, when you think back at, like, and you could bring up villains throughout, like, the history of film that were played by people that are menacing and horrifying, and they're people.
Yeah.
Right? Because for example, Peter Cushing. Yes, I'm bringing up Star Wars. Peter Cushing and digital Peter Cushing was not so great. Peter Cushing is great.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I'm anti-digital. I think it's fine for side characters, for villains. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, even in the movie Tron, I'm talking the original Tron.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had Sark, right?
Yeah.
Who was a person. Then you had the MCP, the Master Control Program, which was a digital, an animated effect, not even a digital effect. It was just cartoon animated.
Mm-hmm.
Not as menacing.
Love MCP.
Humans make the best villains. All right, so before we talk about, let's talk about something that happened today as we're recording this.
Yep.
The trailer for Star Trek Discovery launched. And
crashed.
And what's weird is, so the trailer launched, and it's set 10 years before Kirk, Spock, and the Enterprise, right? And so it's another Star Trek prequel.
Of course.
And here's what's weird. Okay, so it's got a ton of views, no surprise, on YouTube, but fully more than 25, but more than 30% are thumbs down. And usually, yeah, so I'm a little surprised. You know what it looks like? It looks like a little too J.J. Abrams for me. Is this a prequel to the original Star Trek series with velour shirts? Let's bring back the velour.
Yeah.
Or
let's just do a series that takes place after the Next Generation.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I feel like they're having a problem coming up with a vision for the future.
Yeah.
But the vision of the past is too sophisticated. It doesn't look like it matches.
I was reading an interview right around the time that Star Trek Into Darkness came out, and I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was like Robert Forsey or someone. But they were mentioning that their approach, their reasoning for doing prequels and kind of rearranging the timeline is because
they got this right.
Yeah. I still get chills when I hear that. But the reason for...
Except it's not the Enterprise.
Yeah.
It's the STD.
But the reason for going back constantly is because they have this idea that in the future, everything has straightened itself out and everything is perfect. And there's no drama, like, in that kind of perfect utopia... And the drama is in kind of building towards that utopia. And I think that's a complete load of bullshit.
Right.
Because I think a more compelling idea for Star Trek to go into would be kind of see how, like, things are kind of breaking apart and how the characters and how how Starfleet could kind of try to bring it back together.
You mean like at the end of Deep Space Nine, kind of, you know?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
But to a more, like... You see it break down. You see, like, all these inner fightings and everything. And it's almost kind of the direction of the show is to bring it back to that utopia, bring it back to that hopeful future. I think that's a way that they should progress with the Star Trek storyline, not keep going back.
Well, they have to. I mean, look, I just don't know why they didn't, you know, come up with something that fit the timeline that we know. To me, the best Star Trek that's being made now isn't being made by the people who own Star Trek. It's Star Trek Continues.
Mm.
Star Trek Continues.
I haven't checked that out yet, by the way. I know you're in it.
Yes. Well, I was in... Look, I'm in a bit part in one episode, but that's not why I'm plugging it. I don't care. You know, I didn't get paid to do it. I did it because I'm a fan.
Mm.
And what I like about it is it respects the chronology, the look, even the production design, and the way it was photographed so that you could be watching the original series of Star Trek. And as would happen sometimes in TV shows and soap operas and whatnot, a certain actor would leave and they would just replace that actor with a different actor. And it's as if the original Star Trek series was going in, you know, season three, and they just replaced all the actors, but the show looks, feels, sounds the same. It's the same tone. It's the music, like the just the production design is perfect down to like the threading on the beds in the medical bay. Like,
are there lens flares?
There are no lens flares. So if you watch Star Trek Continues, I know they've got about three episodes left, but what's exciting about it is it's going to build towards the series finale that Star Trek, the original series, never had, so that it segues directly into, which would happen years later, Star Trek the Motion Picture, kind of setting up the events. You know, why did Spock go to Vulcan and give up Starfleet? Why did Bones McCoy quit? Why did Captain Kirk get bumped up to Admiral and accept that position rather than, continue on voyages on a starship? So it's interesting. I mean, that show was just canceled, right? Mm-hmm. So there was no series finale for the original Star Trek series. And that's what Vic Mignogna and James Kerwin and Lisa Hansel, Michelle Specht, all the people that I know, my friends at Star Trek Continues that are involved, are attempting to do. And I think that that's far more compelling to me than what CBS... If CBS was smart, they would just buy Star Trek Continues. They would buy Star Trek Continues and put it on the app because technically they own it. Yeah. They should buy it out. They should pay them. I know, unfortunately, I don't think that'll happen because it'll set a bad precedent where fan productions will start up in the hopes that like major studios will just buy them out. And I think that you can't do that. But this is the exception. It's because there's such love and respect coming from everyone that's involved in the making of Star Trek Continues, that series, that it just perfectly matches the original series. I don't like this Star Trek. I mean, I posted this trailer and said, look, it just looks like generic science fiction show that you could call Space Trek. It doesn't feel like what Star Trek is supposed to be about, which is, it's about humanity. It's not about technology and war. It's not about war. There was one movie that was really about fighting and did it well, which was Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. It's basically a submarine, thing. It's, Horatio Hornblower. Look that up. Google that. But also you should Google and look up, because I don't know it off the top of my head, Star Trek Continues. You can find the episodes on Vimeo or YouTube or StarTrekContinues.com. I'm sure that's pretty much the correct one. But that, I look at this Star Trek Discovery, nothing about it gets me excited. And I do think we're living in a time now where these large franchises, you're seeing the lead characters replaced by female leads, where traditionally there would be a male lead. So I think that there's a little blowback from that. Look, I'm not saying that there's justification for it. I think I applaud diversity. And if anything, Star Trek really, pioneered diversity on television.
Absolutely.
It absolutely did. And so, but I do think there might be fatigue from certain members of the fan community that are like, are all the franchises now going to have female leads? I feel like, well, whatever, I'm sure that there are a bunch of other good characters as well. Who cares, so that doesn't, it doesn't bother me, but I'm the chatter online is that some people are upset that it's a female led series and, get over it.
You know what looks good though? The what? Orville.
Okay. In the same week that the Star Trek Discovery trailer comes out, Seth MacFarlane comes out with the Orville, which looks hysterical. It really looks like it's like Galaxy Quest, but maybe even more Star Trek. That looks so fun.
Directed by Jon Favreau.
Yeah, directed by Jon Favreau. Yeah. I think it's the trailer that debuted online looks hysterical. The Orville, what a weird name for a starship. I mean, it's just also like once a fandom's been around for a long time, it's when you see a parody of it, that means that the ideas within that fandom are kind of getting tired.
Yeah.
So I feel like Star Trek needs to get back to its roots or do something different, like a Deep Space Nine. Or why don't we do a Star Trek series about the Klingon Empire? That was long in development and never happened. Yeah. Michael Dorn was supposed to be a part of that show. That should have happened. You know, show us another corner of the universe. That would have been exciting. Kind of like reminds me, just so we can bring it all back to Star Wars. Reminds me of when I was addicted to video games, and boy, I was addicted to video games. And I remember trying to write the first edition of the Film Festival Guide was disrupted by I was playing the game X-Wing.
Yes.
Oh, I was addicted to it. We're talking about, you know.
That's my childhood right
now.
Oh,
my God. And I bought like the special, thing that was the controller that went with that game, that it was made to be played with X-Wing. I bought every expansion pack, B-Wing and, you know, all the different expansion packs and missions and all that. But the better game, even the best of all of those in that series created by Lucas Holland was TIE Fighter. TIE Fighter,
I agree,
hands down. Yeah. It was every major battle that you remember from the Star Wars films. I'm talking original trilogy from the Empire's point of view.
Yep.
It was incredible. You'd see the Emperor, you'd see like that, you know, we're trying to defeat these horrible rebels, like, and it was what their mission was. Not the rebels, which you kind of know from because the Star Wars films are from the rebels' point of view. This was the Empire's point of view. Amazing. Now, why don't they do that in Star Trek? Why don't they do, like, I feel like there are better ideas that can be explored and radical ideas. It's like, it still comes down to, it's a crew with a ship and they have adventures and there's lessons.
Have you heard anything about the new Battlefront game, the Star Wars Battlefront?
Yes, I watched the trailer. It looks amazing.
Yeah, it also takes that approach where you're playing, like, the story mode, you're playing as a Imperial pilot who basically watches the Death Star explode.
Right.
The second Death Star on the moon of Endor. I love that idea, and I think Star Trek, like, the Klingon Empire would be a great different take on you know, the universe.
Yeah, I feel like it's been around long enough. They can mix it up. There are better ideas to be explored, or even like just an anthology series where you explore different parts of the Star Trek universe, and then those different, completely different things all come together. How about a family that's terraforming, trying to build a community on some new planet? Someone who's maybe a lower member, like lower on the totem pole, on a starship, or someone who's a scientist, just different parts of the galaxy. And then let's see these people come together. Kind of like if Robert Altman did a movie where there's all these different characters in the Star Trek universe and it all comes together with one story. And no one knows what I'm talking about who's listening to this podcast, except for old people. Okay, so I'm looking at the Orville on YouTube, and while the Star Trek Discovery had, you know, like over a third thumbs down, this is maybe 10% is thumbs down. So it's weird, like, I guess, not like any of that matters, I guess, but, you know, I mean, we enjoyed the Orville trailer, Star Trek Discovery, not so much. I don't know that it's going to get me to get the CBS app to watch the future episodes, but it will motivate me to be friends with someone who has the app so I can get their code to watch Star Trek Discovery. Yep. But I probably will not, or to wait until it's all aired and then just get the trial version for a week and watch them all. Mm-hmm. I think I'm waiting for the trial version of the CBS app just so that I can watch Star Trek Discovery for free and not subscribe to another app just to watch one show. This is why I'm subscribing to Showtime, is to watch Billions and Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
So, cool. All right, you know, we're running over time here. We got movies to talk about.
We do.
Cool. All right, so launch in. What new things have you seen this week?
So I finally got a chance to see Silence. It came highly recommended by my good friend Vito Lapcola, formerly of Comics on Comics. Mm-hmm. It's Martin Scorsese's latest film. It's about kind of it examines Christian persecution, the real kind, not the red Starbucks war on Christmas kind. It's a historic drama that's set in Japan, and it's about these two priests played by Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver. They're investigating their mentor's disappearance. The mentor is played by Liam Neeson. He's barely in the movie, but when he is in the movie, he's fucking fantastic, as Liam Neeson usually always is. But they go to this village and they're basically preaching their Catholic faith to villagers. And Andrew Garfield gets caught. And it's this whole like story about how they want to basically rid Japan of the Christian faith. And in order to do that, they make examples of the priests and other villagers that are kind of, you know, spearheading this crusade to introduce Christianity to Japan. They place images of Christ on the ground and they say, all right, you're going to denounce your faith and you're going to step on the image. And it's basically going to, you know, show everybody who wants to join this religion that you don't really believe in it, because if you believed in it, you would stick with your convictions. It's this really great examination of basically sacrifice. There are instances where Andrew Garfield's character is put in situations where it's like, all right, you are going to denounce what you believe and you are going to make these people, you know, like you're going to be an example to these people, or we are going to put these people to death. So it's like very much like, you know, do you stick by what you believe, or do you do the self-sacrificing service of saving other people's lives? I loved it. It's fantastic. I highly recommend it to everybody. Speaking of memorable villains, there's this guy named Issei Ogata, and he plays the Inquisitor, basically a guy that tracks down Christians, tortures them into denouncing the Christian faith. That guy is so amazing. He plays this, he's always smiling. He's this creepy old Japanese dude, and he has this smile and the toothy grin, and he just talks very elegantly. And he's, the way that he tortures people in this movie is just so sinister and weird that when you watch him, it's very unsettling. It, yeah, fantastic villain. It'll definitely, you know, restore your faith and whatever Jude Law.
It'll restore your faith.
Yeah. Yeah, hey.
Look, what's that, weird is, what's weird is, as a non-religious person, mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up, you know, I think I went to catechism a couple times when it interfered with my television viewing schedule when I was like in second grade or something.
Yeah.
You know? Like I just was not so, but I respect people who are religious. Like I feel like what some people get out of religion, I get out of listening to a Nine Inch Nails song. So I understand like being inspired and passionate about something that moves you. But all of these movies that take religion, like they're just lost on me. Mm-hmm. Because not having, like never having been moved deeply by religion enough to have it be something that I pursue lifelong. Last Temptation of Christ, I remember I fell asleep when I saw it. And then Silence, I looked at it and it goes like, for me, just it's not gonna do anything to me. Now, having said that, your description of it is actually more interesting than all the trailers that I saw. Now it makes me want to see it. It makes me actually really want to see the film.
I think it's told in a way where it doesn't beat you over the head with the religious stuff. It's more of like just a commentary.
Well, it sounds like it's more about making moral choices than it is about religious, you know, choices. Because I think that kind of blind fanaticism in The Boogeyman is it doesn't work with me because I'm a science guy. I'm a science guy that I believe that there's things that are unexplained so I think it's kind of arrogant of us as, you know, these creatures living on this, you know, delicate ball in the universe. It's arrogant for us to think that we have the answers, which is why I don't trust religious leaders at all, because they're just making shit up, in my opinion. I'm sure I offended somebody. Look, as if our numbers on this podcast could not go any lower. All religious people. I'm saying I respect it. I just, not for me, you know?
No, and that's fine. And on the other side of the spectrum, I identify myself as Christian. I'm not, you know, super churchgoer, you know, you're wrong, you're going to hell type
person. But having said that, like, I do think that, like, the values, like, all the, like, Ten Commandments, those are really good ideas. We should actually all do those. So all the moral stuff, the problem is what bothers me is all the hypocrisy, which is so, there's so much of it. I just think we're just surrounded by it. And the fact that, like, you know, we're still living in a time where religious war is a thing, you know? It's bothered me, and it's not something that, you know, it's films that explore this topic are always challenging to interest someone like me, but this one sounds really good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I identify myself as Christian, but I'm not the red Starbucks cup war on Christmas kind of person that just forces my beliefs on other people. They're my beliefs, and I'm not even saying that I'm right. For all I know, I'm wrong. I don't have that arrogance.
First of all, that's the whole point of all religion, is to tell other people they're wrong.
Yeah. I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't know if I agree with it, but I don't like the religions that push it on you.
Yeah.
I'm like, I like a little this, choice. Maybe I will go to church. Yeah. But probably not.
This movie isn't preachy. At least in my opinion, I don't think it's preachy. I think that there's a lot of fascinating dialogue between like the Japanese stance.
So it's not preachy like God's Not Dead 2?
Fuck those movies.
Every time I see a trailer for the movies, yeah. It's like, oh.
No.
They look awful.
It's interesting because Andrew Garfield and Issei Ogata's character, they have this really interesting dialogue where they're basically kind of waxing philosophically about their beliefs. He believes that Japanese is a country where they basically worship nature. They're very into nature, and that if you plant this seed of Christianity into the ground, basically Japan is a swamp and it's not going to take root and it's going to wither and die. And
you're saying they're trying to drain the swamp?
Pretty much. That is an analogy they use. But it's interesting to see Andrew Garfield kind of argue his case. Like, you know, it's a fascinating movie. I think that there's a lot for non-religious people to get out of it. I don't think it's a movie purely for religious people. But again,
you've already sold me. You don't have to talk about this movie anymore.
All right.
But can we talk about something that's not movie related?
Sure.
And this is like, okay. So first of all, I have a job that I work on all day, mm-hmm. and I work on the Film Threat stuff on the side for fun, 'cause I love and passionate about indie film. And indie film doesn't pay anything, so Film Threat's this side thing. But I have to say, like, the thing that's captured my attention more than any TV show or any movie that's out right now is this fucking shit happening in Washington, D.C.
Oh, God.
That is like, I'm sorry, I can't ignore it anymore. Like, it is just, it is all-consuming on the news. It's in my feed. It is, like, it's coming to a head, all this craziness. We're living, like, are we living in a real life version of the Manchurian candidate? I don't know. There are no answers, but I will say this. It is a huge distraction. You know, it is a huge distraction. The news coming out of Washington, D.C. and the sort of crumbling Trump presidency. Look, I'm old enough to remember, like, will barely remember. Here's what I remember. I remember that there were really boring people on the TV when there should have been cartoons. This is what I remember because I grew up at a time when cartoons were Saturday morning and that was it.
Yep.
That's all you got. Here's your Saturday morning cartoons. It's on from 7 a.m. to noon and then we're done. And that was it. Once a week. That's all you get. So the thing that bugged when all this Watergate nonsense was happening in the 70s, I just remember that the TV shows I liked weren't on. Mm-hmm. And look, as a single digit age little kid, that made me mad. So now this is such echoes of that. It's bizarre. And, you know, it's hard to like focus on, yeah, should I go see this new King Arthur movie? Our fucking country's burning down.
Yeah.
So there's my rant on that. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. And I'm not going to like pick a side or argue anybody. I'm just going to say that this is an incredible distraction. And no matter where you stand, I think the huge tragedy is not, you know, Republican, Democrat, all that bullshit. I think they're just shades of, you know, different sides of bad. But I think there's some that are less bad than others. I'm not going to say, but I will say that things aren't getting done. And if you travel outside of the United States, one thing that I've noticed is how much money is put into infrastructure and in these other countries, whether it's mass transportation, whether it's services such as healthcare, even like, God, I was in Germany and they have like this amazing, their money is sophisticated, like so that it can't be counterfeited. It's like, you look at how much progress other parts of the world, other industrialized nations have made, and we're freaking backwards. Our airports are shit. Yeah. Our roads and bridges are shit. Like, look, I don't care. Republican, Democrat, fix it. Someone go there and fix this nonsense and make a better society for all of us, you know? But you know, so I don't know. That's it. I'm not running for Congress, but I look at some of these congressmen. I think, holy shit, I could do that if I had not posted so many embarrassing, damaging things about myself already on social media.
Yeah, if you
but
just
I could have had that job. So, but I don't know. Maybe at this point, does it even matter in a post-Trump age? Like, you know, who cares? Really, are you entertaining on television? Is that now the barometer for, you know, being into getting into elected office? There really is a professionalism that I think needs to occur with anyone in those kinds of positions.
It worries me because...
You know what? This would make a good movie.
Yeah.
Everything that's happening. And there was that...
They made it. It's called Idiocracy.
Well, everybody said... But what I'm... But there is also like... Wasn't there like a script floated around? Like they actually made... it was a miniseries that was written about the election.
Yeah, you told me about that. I don't know much more...
All I heard is that a pilot was written, and who knows if it was purchased.
But we're definitely going to look back on these days and just shake our heads and wonder how the fuck it all happened.
Right.
I hate getting into politics. It makes me squeamish, to be honest.
Oh, no, I love getting into politics. But you know what? You know who hates me getting into politics? Everyone listening to this podcast. But seriously, like, look, here's the deal. Here's the deal. Mm-hmm. We're doing this show for the listeners.
Yeah.
Do you want us to talk about politics or not? Yes or no? Should we talk about politics on the Film Threat podcast? Because someone even suggested that Film Threat coming back, maybe Film Threat could be political in some sense. I mean, certainly I think we haven't seen the effects of it yet, that art will now really be influenced by what's happening in our country. I mean, it was just announced this week that Michael Moore is making a film, kind of a follow-up. Michael Moore, a contributor to the Film Threat Kickstarter campaign. So thank you, Michael Moore. But it's not going to impact any reviews. It's not going to help your Rotten Tomatoes score, Michael Moore. But having said that, his film Fahrenheit 9/11, now being followed up with a follow-up, Fahrenheit 11/9, about the election day and the results of that. So that's actually in the works as we speak. Yeah. I feel like it's almost like it's like therapy for liberals. I feel bad about things. How can I feel good? I just want to be with people who agree with everything I think. That doesn't help things either, I don't believe. No. I think that's just, you know, it's I guess it's a matter of which bubble do you live in, you know? So if you don't think you live in a bubble, you're in a different bubble, okay? Seriously.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, look, my family is mostly liberal, let's be honest, but there are factions of my family that I know voted for Trump. So, and they're still members of my family for the time being. So, no, I am saying this jokingly, folks. But if you're interested in us talking about politics, maybe it'll come up in the podcast, or we will just talk about shitty King Arthur movies coming out of Warner Brothers. But gosh, we're actually running out of time. So what do we have time for, like one more movie? And I had like a stack of movies. We'll have to do it next week.
We do have time for one more movie.
Okay. I'm
excited to talk about this one.
All right.
It's called Folk Hero and Funny Guy.
Oh, you recommended this to me.
I did. It is written and directed by Jeff Grace. It's his directorial debut. He's written on a few things, and he acted on How I Met Your Mother. He had a bit part in that. Anyways, it revolves around two old friends There's this guy named Jason. He's a popular folk singer, kind of a hippie dude. You know, looks like a mountain man, has a beard, kind of
like you.
Yeah, except for I hate folk music. and his friend Paul. Paul is this neurotic comedian, and I'm kind of tired of neurotic characters. Anyways,
what's the matter? Do you not like Woody Allen? Do you not like Woody Allen movies and neurotic characters in movies?
Yeah, yeah. I think, like I said in a previous podcast, if you're more socially awkward than I am, and I think I'm more socially awkward in a kind of easygoing, like just kind of laid back type way. I'm not neurotic and high strung.
You're pretty mellow. It's like you smoke pot, but you don't smell like you do.
I do not smoke pot. Nothing wrong with it. It's just not my thing. I'm more of an alcoholic. Anyways, so Jason is this easygoing partying type while, you know, Paul is neurotic, nervous, and he's kind of in this stage in his career where he doesn't know if being a comedian is what he wants to do. He might go back to being I guess he works on advertisements or something. Mm-hmm. But Jason convinces him to go on tour with him and be in an opening act. He's on this like very intimate tour where he's like playing like bars and whatnot. And Paul decides, yeah, sure, I'll do it. So it's just such a nice buddy movie, like a road trip comedy. But it's very earnest. It's not like crude humor and you aren't seeing, you know, like dick and fart jokes or anything like that. But it's just nice to see their relationship and kind of how they play off of each other. Paul being super high strung and Jason being, you know, this like folk rock god that women are just attracted to and kind of, you know, flocks to him. But there's this one actress, her name is Meredith Hagner. She looks exactly like an older Emma Stone. She is gorgeous. She's a fantastic actress. She plays a character named Bryn.
Did you say asterisk?
I said actress.
Okay.
But sure, asterisk too. Asterisk, ass, whatever. I'm tired. But she looks like Emma Stone. She's a fantastic actress. And she comes in the movie as this love interest to Paul. Like, her and Paul kind of hit it off. And Jason, being a good pal, kind of a wingman, invites her on tour so that Paul can kind of make a move on her and stuff like that. At the end, some stuff happens to where their friendship kind of is tested, but I don't want to give that away. It has a fantastic soundtrack. The soundtrack is great. And I said I hated folk music. I do. But the songs that they play are just...
Except for Cat Stevens.
Yeah,
if you've ever seen Harold and Maude or Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Harold and Maude's a classic.
Probably the greatest moment, one of the greatest moments... Top 10 of the moments from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 was when the music from Cat Stevens came on. That was just, if you still have not seen it, I want to see it again before it leaves theaters. So that's my plan. So,
but the soundtrack is fantastic. It has some really fun cameos by David Cross and Michael Ian Black. It's a really good road trip movie. It's satisfying.
You've convinced me.
Okay.
I'll see it.
All right. It does have a bit of a predictable ending, though, which is kind of a bummer. But other than that, it's solid. Go see it.
Cool. And also, I would just remind everyone listening that if you go to filmthreat.com, every day you're going to read about some new, bizarre, weird, crazy, compelling, fascinating, moving, tearful, interesting, different indie film, documentary, or
that other narrative. People aren't covering.
Yeah, they're not giving the type of coverage that we give. I mean, look, we will review, you know, your Guardians Volume 2 and your Alien Covenants and maybe your King Arthur's, but really, if you want to discover these films, the only way to do it is to read the website every day. And follow us on Twitter at Film Threat, follow the Instagram at Film Threat, and if you want a free Film Threat thing, like maybe a sticker or two, you can send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Film Threat International Headquarters, 5042 Wilshire Boulevard. That's Wilshire Boulevard, PMB 1500, Los Angeles, California, 90036. I'll return your envelope filled with stuff for free, just because, you know why? Because you listen to this podcast, you got all the way to the end, which is normally where people like check out. And Anthony, we can find you at
This Game Cheats on Twitter.
And you can find me at That Chris Gore. And until next time on the Film Threat Podcast, let's get out of
here.